Welcome to Author Express. Thanks for checking us out. This is the podcast where you give us 15 minutes of your time and we give you a chance to hear the voice behind the pages and get to know some of your favorite writers in a new light. I'm one of your hosts, Kathleen Basie. I'm an award-winning musical composer, feature writer, essayist, and of course, storyteller. Let me tell you a little about today's guest. Virginia McCullough defines her writer's life as writing books and helping other people write their books, nonfiction and fiction. A ghostwriter editor for decades, she also writes women's fiction and series romance for Harlequin. As shown in her book, Amber Light, readers can count on Virginia's themes of hope, healing, and plenty of second chances. Watch for her fall 2025 release, How to Be a Writer and Stay a Writer, The First 50 Years Are the Hardest. Virginia, welcome to Author Express.
Well, thank you so much for having me, Kathleen.
I can't believe we haven't had you on yet in all the time we've been on.
It's a real pleasure.
So we start everybody in the same place. We want to know what's the most interesting thing about where you are from. I'm guessing you have had a lot of places that you are from, so pick one.
Well, I'm going to pick where I was born, and that is I grew up in a neighborhood, mid-north neighborhood in Chicago. But the most interesting thing about my life there that extended to my later life was that I took the train several times a week downtown to the Fine Arts Building, which is near Orchestra Hall and the Lions at the Art Institute. And I studied classical ballet, classical dance. I consider that my writing career started when I studied dance, because the focus, the discipline, everything that you need to be a writer over a long haul started in that dance studio. And a lot of it still comes back to me. And I think self-discipline has not been part of my issue with writing. And I think it started there. I think it started with the dance and studying dance.
Virginia, I know that you have a story, a powerful story about how you had to become a writer in order to support your family. Could you tell us a little bit about that?
I was already a writer. I had been writing articles, and I had a portfolio of about 70 articles. But then in the midst of a divorce, I took my children, who were young, sort of preteens, and took them back to Chicago. And that's when I had to then support myself and the kids. And that's when I started to do temp work and look for jobs. And I couldn't find any writing jobs. And one break after another, kind of lucky breaks, allowed me to get my first book contract on a nonfiction healthcare related book, which led to more books, more contracts, which then led to ghostwriting. Editing, book doctoring, all came from that.
You know, one of the things that's the most amazing, I think, about you as a person in the years that I've known you is that you were a single mom and you supported your kids by writing. Like, we're all told that that's just not something you can do. Everybody's told you have to go get some other job.
That's absolutely true. But I'll tell you what happened to me that made a big difference. Once I started ghostwriting and I realized I was good at it, and co-authoring with experts in a field, I could take their complicated information and turn it into words that a lay audience could understand. I loved working for myself so much that I would just do anything to keep working for myself, whatever it took to market. And I joined the National Speakers Association so I could be around speakers. I went to medical conferences so I could connect with healthcare professionals, because I love working for myself. I think that was the driver of everything that came.
So then the fiction came later in your career.
The fiction came later. I fooled around with it once in a while. At one point, I wrote a book, a novel in longhand in a diner every morning, because I was missing the idea of writing fiction. And so I would take those notebooks to this diner that was about two blocks from my house, and I'd scribble my book, and then I would go home and I'd be ready to start the real work, you know. But then in the late 90s, I joined my first critique group, and they were all such great writers. I was kind of embarrassed to almost be in that group, even though I'd had the long writing career, but not in fiction. And they didn't have long fiction careers either, but they were really very talented. And learning how to write fiction, I mean, it's like learning how to write nonfiction. It's a learning curve, folks.
It is. Well, you have a wealth of books out in the world. I believe the number is around 125 now, which is...
It's about 150 altogether, counting the fiction. It was 125 of the nonfiction. And then the ones that have been added more recently are the novels, because I ghostwrite some novels too.
Okay, very good. So 150 books she has written. You have a lot of books.
Over a period of 40 years. I mean, I yes. always want to clarify that, because... We are talking about when all this started.
Yes.
The original move to Maine was, you know, I always say Richard Nixon was still president, but not for long. So it was in the early 1970s. So, and then by the time I was going full time with it, it was the mid 80s. So this is over a long period of time. And professional speakers don't necessarily say, I want a 75,000-word book. A 50,000-word book was just fine.
I gotcha. Yeah, that makes sense.
And same with the ghosting, with some of the ghosting clients. And I just think of them all every once in a while so fondly, how when you hire a ghostwriter, you are entrusting information, and in some cases, extremely personal information, to this other person. And I don't think I recognized or appreciated the full extent of that until later on.
Well, let's focus in on some of those newer fiction books. And particularly today, we're talking about Amber Light. Can you tell us about that book in one sentence?
I can. It's a heroine's journey in which a single act of violence upends Sarah's life. She's 18 years old, and she spends several years reclaiming her life and trying to get back some old dreams.
Beautiful. How do the experiences of your characters reflect parts of your own life or imagination?
Well, interesting you should ask that, because this act of violence was date rape. And she ends up pregnant from it. And that's why, of course, her life is upended. I was assaulted myself many years ago when I was still living in Chicago, but by a stranger. By the time I got to Asheville in the 90s, it was, I volunteered at a rape crisis center. And that's when I learned the difference, how profound, it's a profound difference in experience when someone you know assaults you versus a stranger. I could be anybody, but this very personal connection. And I think that always stuck in my mind. I would take late night calls from people. I showed up at the hospital with the professional from the rape crisis center, and the volunteers would stay with this victim for a long time, sometimes the middle of the night in the emergency room. And that's where I picked up more of what a young girl would go through when she knew somebody. And sometimes, you know, we all know this, but sometimes it's family members and abuse that has gone on for years. And this was the recovery process that I saw with these women. So I started writing about sexual assault in nonfiction. I wrote an article for a Catholic family magazine in the 1970s, and they'd never touched this kind of a subject. And it was about talking about the issue, bringing it up, talking to their sons and their daughters about what's out there. And then also to just stop making jokes about it, stop blaming victims. We were at that point in the women's movement where we could really talk about that too. Stop blaming victims. Let's talk about this. Let's bring it up in the open. But, you know, but really that I think the heroine's journey, hero's journey, heroine's journey, I still use both versions of that. I think that Amber Light was my first experience with consciously writing this heroine's journey. And then I began to think about the heroine's journey in just a general way, and hero's journey, and how it seems like now I look back and it seems like this whole writing life has been a heroine's journey with all of the elements of the helpers, the mentors, the snares, the traps, the call. Every book is a call. And are you going to refuse the call? Or are you going to accept the call? To me, every individual book, every individual project ends up having some of those elements.
Yeah, you've kind of talked about that to me in your emails beforehand. I thought it was really beautiful.
We don't see it talked about that way that often.
I think you're right. You had said to me that most people who write book club kind of women's fiction feel like this is the kind of journey that their characters are on. And we do start to see parallels in our own lives too.
Yes, and we can see our parallels in our children's lives. We can see the parallels in life all around us, even if it's only a certain slice. You know, I mean, I've had friends, I'm sure you've had friends who have faced real serious illness, right? So you watch them. This is a journey. This is a hero's journey. What goes on during a long illness and recovery. It has all the elements of the call and the wanting to deny it, wanting to refuse it, taking it on, finding the ups and downs, the helpers, the mentors, the traps, the snares. It's all of that. And I hadn't thought about life quite that way before.
It makes you understand where the hero's journey came from. It's because it's reflecting life. And I think that's what's so great about fiction, is that it allows us to enter in. And I think the kind of nonfiction, when you're writing autobiographies and things like that, that it also, it's story. We connect through story, and we connect other people's stories to our own lives, and it sheds meaning. And that's one of the beautiful things about what we do.
Well, I think what I realized in this, when I started writing, nobody talked about brand. You know, I mean, that just was not a thing. And then when I was new in Romance Writers of America, RWA, people started to talk about branding our work, and I had to come up with the brand. And I came up with Hope, Healing, and Plenty of Second Chances. I might have even come up with that around the time I was writing, at least making notes for Amber Light. I don't know. But most of my work will include this hope, healing, and plenty of second chances. And then I discovered not too long ago, a few years ago, that when I looked at the body of the ghosted work, that the theme was pretty much hope, healing, and plenty of second chances. If I was writing a cancer book, a cancer therapy book, which I've done several of them actually, that's all about hope, healing, and plenty of second chances. I mean, it just is. And people, and some of what I was saying about people entrusting me with their personal stories. I wrote a lot of personal stories about recovery, recovery from addiction, divorce, death, death of adult children. There were just so many personal stories, and they were all about hope, healing, and plenty of second chances. Or sometimes I would have to say it's not always plenty of second chances, but second chances.
Well, you have given us lots of things to think about today. If people want to come and find you and the body of your work, where do you want to send them?
They can go to my website, virginiamccullough.com.
Okay, very good. And then tell us, what book or story inspires you the most these days?
Well, actually, I was thinking about that. And there's a two-part memoir by Rumor Godin, the late British author. And one is called A Time to Dance, No Time to Weep. And the second volume of it is A House with Four Rooms. And for some reason, I don't know why, this woman and I would have very little in common other than writing. You know, I completely immerse myself in those memoirs every once in a while. I reread them. She talks about her writing process. She talks about some of the hardships. She talks about a literary world that most of us know nothing about, from the 1950s and 60s, and a whole different world. And she was writing by hand and exotic places, or places we thought of at the time as exotic. And so I go back to those. There's something about, I feel like a kinship with her.
Well, thank you for that. That's we love having our reading lists expanded on this podcast. So thank you so much for being on with us today, Virginia.
Well, you are entirely welcome. It's been a pleasure. And I think this is a great idea, interviewing authors.
Thanks for joining us today. Reviews help other people to find us, so please take a minute to give us a rating and leave a few words. We'll be here again next Wednesday. In the meantime, follow us on Instagram at Author Express Podcast to see who's coming up next. Don't forget, keep it express, but keep it interesting.